Okay. So how'd you do? Were you able to come up with more ideas? Yes? Okay. So give me, just for each pair, give me the two weirdest ideas that you get from a particular, so activity and two weird ideas, or interesting ideas.
Okay. Well, for the bicycle, we thought of using it as a Hansel and Gretel thing when you throw the pencil and use it as a reference when you come back.
Ah, okay, yes. A way, like a direction,
yes.
Like keeping your
track,
marking, like breadcrumbs, right, yes. Okay, do you have another one for a different activity?
We thought that the, like you could use a pencil to like make a necklace or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
For the activity.
What's the activity?
Oh, sorry, for getting dressed.
For getting dressed, okay, okay. How about?
So for repairing objects, we said you can stabilize that desk.
Uh-huh.
And put it like if it's.
Oh, right, to make the desk stable. Okay, yes, good.
And for riding a bicycle, because you said like something a bit quirky.
Yeah.
We said biting, like putting in your mouth if you're nervous, like
right?
Just to, you know, brace
if you're
yourself.
Scared about riding, you might fall over. It's like, ah, yeah. Okay, why not? How about you two? Right, because it can
cooking,
burn.
Yes. Fire.
Right?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Usually you get cooking to stir, but making the fire that heats things up, why not? Why not?
And also we can use for the calculate the volume, like you can just dip it into the water.
Ah, good. Mm-hmm. Okay, good. How about you two?
For riding a bike, we have if you have a big pencil, you can tie to the wheel and use that to mark on the road.
Ah, yes, okay, it's a marker, very nice, yes.
And on for when you're riding a bike, you just throw the pencil at someone for attention.
Okay. Let's start back here, because I'm going to keep you guys for last. How about Victoria and Sidonie?
For repairing an object, have applied glue on tiny details and use it as a screwdriver.
Okay, so applying glue and as a screwdriver, okay, good. How about you two?
So for cooking, we have scrap the meat before marinating.
Okay.
I mean,
good.
Quite
yeah.
Poisonous, but okay.
Yeah, well, you know.
And for getting dressed, we have use it as a curling machine.
As a what?
Like for the hair.
You oh, it's curl a curler.
Oh, curling. Curling.
Ah, yes.
Curling your hair.
I don't need that. Mine just does it, but you know. Okay. How about Sashida and
so
Danielle and...
For switches, if the wire don't have the switch,
so you
the wires will be naked, and to put in the switch, you can use wood.
Okay.
And
about
one
electricity.
Is for bicycle. It was for the repairing objects.
Mm-hmm.
And
or
the second
repairing.
One is for the riding a bicycle. If the, well, it can be repairing object also. If the brakes like are broken, then you can use it.
To kind
no,
of,
as a
right, as a way of doing it. And
so why is everybody doing riding a bicycle?
That's well, because it's one of the ones we off said.
Oh, I see. Ah, oh, cheaters.
No, they're not cheaters. Do you have a third one? Sashida?
They were the gardening ones.
Oh,
I
you had
to. I just thought like we can dig
yeah.
with it.
You can dig with it,
yeah.
Sure.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah. Well, I was hoping that they would come up with other activities. There is little dots there. So.
Yes, we had dots. Some of them have other, these, you know.
Oh, yeah.
When you only have 5 minutes, sometimes you just go with what you can. All right.
We choose gardening, so we can use the pencil as a pole for this, like a beanstalk to grow.
A stick,
yes,
yeah.
Right. In some years, we have that as an image of an idea
yeah,
that
yeah.
you can do. So, yes, that's a good one.
And then, like, usually in a plant pot, you have, like, the holes, so the soil will breathe.
Right, to aerate.
Air the soil.
Good.
So we had one for playing board game.
Uh-huh.
We have a bunch of pencils of different lengths, and we hold them, and whoever picks the smallest one.
Ah, yes.
The short
right.
straw.
Yes,
yeah,
so playing games,
straw.
That's a different
yeah,
one.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. All right, and Matthias.
And the other is using it for cooking as a kebab stick.
Sure.
Kebab stick.
Yes. Which is a little bit like the punching the meat. Maybe
yeah,
not
no,
the best thing in terms of your health, but, you know, sure. Why not? How about you guys in the back?
For cooking, we had similar to the kebab stick, but using it as a cotton candy.
Oh, right. It's a cotton candy stick, right? To
oh,
pick up
stick.
The cotton candy.
And also to gather flour that would have spread on the...
Oh, very nice. Okay, yes, tidy up your workspace. Okay, Carl and Anastasia.
So the first one is for coding. So if you have long names, you can type it. The second one, while cooking, if you want to move like a hot pan, you can create like a carpet of pencils.
That's right, this is a hot pan. Yeah, good. All right.
Oh, to slide it.
Oh, ooh. To slide it to even, that's even better. So not just a static one, but a rolling thing, sort of.
Like,
all right.
Yeah, when they were building pyramids.
Yeah, building the pyramids. Okay. All right, so again, these are ways of getting you thinking, and we're thinking about tools. So a pencil is a tool. It's designed as a tool, but it is also interesting because you can appropriate it. You can use it for all kinds of different purposes because it has physical properties that you are aware of and that you can repurpose or reuse to do other things. So that's the message that we wanted to get out of this. This is a kind of a break the ice, warm up, get to, well, you already know each other, but anyway, get to know each other and do stuff. All right, so now we're going to jump into the theory bit, and we're going to talk about what we call generative theories of interaction. So let's see what we've got here. We took out the slide that has the different types of theory, or we did that goes later, the descriptive and whatever.
Oh, yeah, no.
Yeah, and no, we took that out.
That's when we'll do it more.
We'll do that later when we go
this
into
is just
detail.
This overview.
Is the highlight. All right, so you can think about this as a process, a thinking process. This comes out of the fact that we're in a field that is highly multidisciplinary. That means there are a lot of different research and other disciplines that contribute to our knowledge. And we have psychologists and sociologists and anthropologists who tell us about how human beings operate in the world. And we have computer scientists and engineers who tell us about how you can build interactive systems. And we also have a variety of other design disciplines that talk about what the design might be and how to think creatively about new ways of doing things. So that's all very good, and we've talked about that in the Design of Interactive Things class, and you've talked about it in different ways in your class as well. But the problem we have is, what are the underlying fundamental theories that we can use that describe how we use interactive systems, like when we work with interactive technology? Is there anything that's more fundamental? Is there anything more fundamental than simply coming up with a bunch of brainstorm ideas and kind of what we call point designs, doing a bunch of different things? So the role of generative theory is to try to come up with theories that are grounded in our knowledge that comes out of various other disciplines, often scientific ones, mostly scientific ones, and transform that into principles that we can use to actually design specific things. So we start with this notion of a generative theory of interaction, and we have these little blue clouds which represent theories that come from the outside. So we have perhaps a theory of how people use tools. So the notion of an affordance comes out of J.J. Gibson's work on affordances, and it's been adopted greatly in human-computer interaction. You've certainly heard about it in various courses. And the idea is that I can, I'm going to steal one, this pencil here, which is your pencil, not even my pencil. The fact that we can think about this in the ways that you've just gone through is because of how we as human beings interact with objects in the world. We not only deal with them as they are designed to be, but we are also aware of their properties and what actions they can afford or allow us to do. And the classic example is, this is a chair. It's designed to be a chair, and I can sit on it, right? Because it's solid enough. If I had this made out of paper, it probably wouldn't be appropriate to sit on. And I can also sit on this table because even though it's not designed as a chair, it has all the properties I need to do that. So the thinking through from a scientific point of view of what is an affordance and how does that all work comes out of psychology, experimental psychology. And we know a lot about how human beings do this sort of thing, and there's a whole sort of theory behind why your ability to do what you just did with the pencil works. So that's a theory, and that's great. But now as a designer, what do? You kind of like, oh, well, that's nice. But how do we make the link between what you actually design? So that gets to the next thing. What we need to do is extract concepts from these theories that are relevant to the design of interactive systems. So it's not just how people deal with pencils, which is not, well, I guess you could argue it's not an interactive technology. Well, you could argue. I claim post-it notes are a really nice interactive technology. So anyway, but what we think about, now we're shifting here to our role as designers of interactive systems. And at this point, what I need to do is extract the elements of these theories that are generally relevant. Now we want to get specific concepts that are specifically relevant to the design of an interactive system. And then we create what we call generative principles. And this is the key idea here. These are what we call actionable, which means that you as a designer, if you put on your designer hat, can act on these principles and explicitly change what you design in a way that is influenced by the general theory, but in the context of a concept that is there. So think of this as the blue stuff happens outside of us. This is the scientists, the biologists, the psychologists. They do whatever they do. They don't care about us. They're interested in generating knowledge about the world and about how people interact and about biology and about whatever they do. Here, we extract things that are concepts that we feel are relevant, that are inspired by these theories. And then we transform these into specific generative principles that a designer can act on to create something. So that's the process that we go through.
So just, we'll give examples shortly after that, but already now, a pencil is a tool. It's a tool for writing. So one of the concepts we'll talk about is tools or instruments.
Instruments, right.
And then the principle that will come up is called polymorphism, and it says, well, what if a tool could be used for operating on different types of things? Like you saw a pencil can write on different types of surfaces or be used for different things. So once you put names on these sort of generative principles to say, well, what if we apply this principle, what can we get? That's what we call generative. It gives us ideas that we may not have had before.
I was going to say, this is a pen, and it's designed to write on this surface because when I write on this surface, it's easy to erase. I get blue ink all over my finger, but still, it's erased. You can see that somebody wrote on this screen, and it is not easy to erase on this screen, right? So the idea that I can use this pen to write on different surfaces is true, but it also has different impact. And so we think about those things as a designer. What are we designing it for, and what are the different contexts of use in which it might operate differently? All right. Now, I said this is a process. This is a process that we've divided into three main steps. And you saw that earlier after the design brief. We talk about using an analytical lens, which is, given a particular principle, how do I analyze this particular artifact that exists already from the perspective of that principle? That's just to see whether the principle exists there or not. Just, does it work or not? The next lens is a critical lens, and that can work with an existing artifact where you critique it, meaning you say, what is good, what is bad? You're now adding a value judgment as a designer. You're saying, this could be useful here, or why doesn't it do that? Or, huh, it does that, but it's not good. I mean, it might be a bad principle, right? It might be something that isn't good. So you look at it and you say, how does this work? And what's also interesting about that is that you can take ideas from there and think about how to improve an artifact, right? So adding the principle might help you, right? Now, the last one is the one that's most fun, which is this constructive lens. And this is why we call it generative theory. We are doing a process of deconstructing something that exists and then reconstructing it. And when we reconstruct it, we're using these generative principles to create ideas for new artifacts or revised artifacts. Okay? So it's a very, this is a very high level view of what we're going to do, and we're going to work through this process step by step. So don't worry if, like, you don't have the details of all of this yet, so that's fine. It's just to give you the overall view. But basically, we're going to teach you some concepts and some generative principles. We don't have all of them. We've got a set that we know that work, and they will be very useful to you. But there are also a lot of people that have been inspired by this and going out and, you know, building more generative theory in this approach. Think of this as both learning the specific principles that you can use, but also as a process where you use these different lenses systematically to go through and analyze what's out there, critique it, and then generate something new. Okay? Are there any questions on that at this point? And again, I don't expect you to have a deep understanding of what we're doing because we're just giving you the overview, but anything that seems it's okay so far? All right. So let's go on to the next bit. All right. There are certain critical pieces here. We have objects of interest, which is now we're thinking about Google Slides, for example. Google Slides lets you create slide presentations. So what are the objects of interest in Google Slides from the user's perspective that you as a designer need to provide to make this a useful system? So do we want to do?
So object of interest, if you have a vague recollection of the fundamentals of HCI class, I know it's so far away. It's like four months away for some of
four
you.
4 months away.
I talked about objects of interest, right? Yes. And this is one of the concepts. When you create a new design for a new interactive application, you have to think, well, what is the stuff that this application lets me interact with, lets me do? Mm-hmm. So we define the objects of interest as conceptual objects. At this point, they don't need to have a form on the screen or know what they look like, but we know that if we're going to do a presentation application, well, we want to have what we call slides, which actually is a word that comes from the physical world when we're doing slides by hand on actually transparencies, right? So it's the conceptual objects that users manipulate, have to be able to manipulate in order to achieve their goals. In the in the introductory class, I think I took the example, for example, of a chat application. So if you want to do instant messaging, well, sometimes even in the name of the app, it says what the object. You need messages. And once you have messages, as we'll see in a minute, you'll need maybe conversations. So there are the things that really you cannot do without and that any user will have to understand those basic concepts.
Right.
So if we looked at, this is a snapshot of a Google Slides deck. So we imported some of Wendy's.
It imported very badly, ugly. But
well, because it was in PowerPoint and Google Slides is not good at importing from PowerPoint. But anyway, and so the first exercise we're going to do here is you all know Google Slides, right? You've all.
How many of you have actually used? I assume you all know what it is, right? It's a slide presentation thing. It's like PowerPoint or Keynote for making slides, right? How many of you actually used it to create slides? Okay, so you have some familiarity.
Pretty much everybody.
All right, that's good. For those of you who haven't, you know, it's okay. It's a useful thing. All right, so let's.
And so,
let's talk about.
Do we need to?
Yes, but let's talk about what we can see here, and then actually we should hand this out. Maybe still work in groups because in pairs.
It's better to use two brains.
We're not trying to. Here, if you give me half, I can. Michelle, give me half. Give me some. Okay. There you go, and you can work in three if you want.
So if you want, you can open Google Slides and, use it as a thinking aid.
I'll get it. Okay. So look at this image and think about.
Got it?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
It at different levels. So keep in mind that when you are building a slide presentation, you have a slide deck, right? You have individual slides. You have sets of slides. So think about what those different elements are that you as a user want to be able to manipulate or control.
And one way is to think about when you talk about or explain to someone how to do something, what kind of words you use, the nouns that you use.
Yeah. What are the objects of interest in this space? Okay. And so I'll give you, again, 5 minutes. These are short exercises, but 5 minutes, and then we'll discuss, because I think it's important that we deconstruct this in a particular way.